So he was quite despondent, but he made it to the funeral all right. And so he straightened up all that time. And on the 15th of January, I took him to work. He worked at 7:30 to 4:30. And I had told him previously that I couldn't do anything then, but that I never would divorce him, but that we would have to change our mode of living and separation for the good of the children, because it was terrific, some of the things I had to listen to and go through with him. You know, he threatened us so much when he would get, he was, you know, it changes the personality completely. He didn't mean half of it. And then many a night I moved the children up and slept in the office where I worked, you know, to protect them. And so I took him to work that morning, and he says, "Are you still planning on the separation?" I said, "Yes, as soon as school's out. I can't do anything now. I got more than my load right now, and I can't do anything." You know, I said, "I have mama on my hands, and of course, you're not too well, and I'm teaching, and I don't want to bring anything into the school system." And he didn't have a cent of money. He promised me he'd stay on the job. And the Mexican woman that I had for 25 years, see, I was coming out here at the house to see about the windmill. And I had one of my boys staying with her, and I had to pick him up to take him to school. And so then as I went by the house at 8 o'clock, the maid told me that he already was back there with a bottle of liquor that some guy gave him. And they knew he wasn't supposed to drink. He was a total abstainer. And these men that did that had their stake made, you know. But they don't help people like that, you know. So anyway, that was the end of that. And it was a terrible ordeal. And of course, he had threatened suicide. And you know, they threatened it, and you have to pay a little attention to it. And my oldest boy had gotten a .22 rifle from my mother, because he helped to raise some friars, see. And the maid and I and all of us had looked all over the house for any .22 bullets, you know. But that day, when we went home at noon, the older boy and I, it was 15th of January, and it was cold. And the maid told me, said, "He's on the floor in the bathroom, and I haven't gone in there because he's just in his underwear, you know." And she was an old maid. "And I haven't let Mark in there." And I said to the older boy, I said, "Let's get him up, put some pajamas on him. He'll take a death of cold here." And I fixed his bed and put him on the bed. He was completely out. We had a struggle getting him up because he was 6'2". We got him back in bed and I covered him. And of course I broke down crying. And I remember the older boy saying, little fellow was just 13. He says, "Oh, mother, he'll be all right. He won't get out." He was thinking about the people seeing him, you know. I said, "No, I guess he'll be there until I get home." But at 3 o'clock, he got up and asked the girl for a can of chili. You know, they want something hot, you know, peppery. So she fixed him a can of chili, and he came to the dinette and ate it. And by that time, the baby had gotten up from his nap. And they slept in the same open porch. He slept in one end and the baby in the other. And so he went in the bathroom. The baby was sitting on the potty, and he went in there. And she said that for fully 15 or 20 minutes, he talked to him and told him that he was such a pretty thing, and he just loved him so much, that he loved him just as much as he did the other boys and his dear mother, and just talked to the kid like that, you know. And the kid just worshipped him, see. He was 2.5 years old. And finally, she came in the bedroom and got the clothing for Mark to dress him, and she called him in the living room, and all of a sudden she heard a thud. And he had found one bullet and put the gun in his mouth and sat on the edge of the bed, and he fell over on the floor. And he timed it for the time the school was to be out. When the bell rang for dismissal, my daughter, sister-in-law lived next door to him, and she called me. And she said, "Ann, come home at once. Something terrible has happened." Well, I was just so relieved when I turned the corner and saw that she was outside with the child, because I was afraid that he might have hurt him, you know. And, of course, I went into the bedroom, and the kid got away from her in the commotion and came in there just as I turned him over and took the gun out of his mouth. Of course, the blood all came out. And that child had an obsession about that blood, even though he wasn't quite 3 years old. because he would tell the worst tales you ever heard on that, on that thing. So, so it was quite an ordeal. And from then on, why it went, and I educated them, but I got them all through. They're good men now, all of them. But anyway, now let's go on to some local history.
I would like to ask you a few facts about your family. Your mother was born in Brownsville, I
yes,
think.
Mm-hmm.
But where was your father born?
Edgefield, South Carolina.
How old was he when he moved here to Heidi Arbor?
He was 21 in 1895.
And your mother, did she? What kind of education did she have?
Well, she finished high school in Brownsville. What school they had as high as they went. And then in those days it qualified for teachers, you know.